on the floor. Now my jewelry box froze. Fuck up bowl, fuck up stove. Counted millions in a cold. Bad bitch, booted swole. Got her on bankroll. Can't fold. Just a no. Headshot, case closed.
What is up, guys? It's Andy Frisella, and this is the show for the realists. Say goodbye to the lies, the fakeness, and delusions of modern society, and welcome to motherfucking reality, guys. As always, on Mondays, we've got Q&AF today. That's where you submit the questions, and we give you the answers. Now, you could submit your questions a couple different ways. The first way is...
Guys, you can email those questions in to askandy@andyfrisella.com.
Or you can go in the comments section of the Q&AF videos on YouTube, and you can drop your question in the comments. We'll choose some from there as well. Now, as we go through the week, we're going to have shows within the show. All right, we have multiple formats here. We've got CTI. You're going to hear that tomorrow. That stands for Cruise the Internet. That's where we talk about what's going on in the world. We speculate on what's true. We speculate on what's not true. And then we talk about how we, the people, have to solve these problems going on in the world. Other times, we're going to have Real Talk. Real Talk is 5 to 20 minutes of me giving you a real talk, sort of like what we do on Saturdays, audio exclusive stuff. And then we have 75 Hard Verses. 75 Hard Verses, where someone who has completed the 75 Hard program comes in and talks about how their life was a shit show and how they unshit showed it using 75 Hard. And if you're unfamiliar with 75 Hard, it is the initial phase of the Live Hard program. The Live Hard program is the world's most popular mental toughness program in history, and it's free. You can get it at episode 208 on the audio feed only. We didn't do YouTube. We've only been YouTubing for about a year. So go on episode 208, get the program for free. If you're one of those guys that has to know all the details, or one of those girls that has to know all the details, we can go through the Book of Mental Toughness, which is available on my website, andyfrisella.com. The Book on Mental Toughness will give you the entire Live Hard program, 75 Hard plus all three phases plus 10 chapters on mental toughness, and some case studies of some very famous people about how they cultivated mental toughness to get where they are and become recognizable names as you know them. So we don't have commercials on the show. You're going to notice that. But we do have a fee for the show, and the fee is not monetary. The fee is very simple. We're constantly battling traffic. Bans, shadow bans, censorship. We talk about sensitive subjects on the show, which are the things that need to be talked about. The internet doesn't like that. So we rely on our audience, that's you, to share the show. All right. So I finance the show myself. I don't run commercials on the show because I don't want to answer to anybody because I want to keep it real. So in exchange for that, I ask very simply that you share the show. So don't be a hoe.
Share the show.
All right. What's up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good.
Yeah. Got a little something new on your dome there.
Oh yeah, I got a new hat. Yeah, this is on the next release.
Damn,
the
okay.
Real American.
So this is the pre-release of the release.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we got a release this week, don't we? This week, Wednesday. Yeah, Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
Wednesday, 7 o'clock.
Look at that.
Yeah,
that's fucking sick, though.
Yeah, I like it, dude. Yeah, something different.
I would like to like it.
Oh yeah, you didn't get one yet.
Yeah.
This is only one. No one has one. You want this one with all the black?
I mean,
I bet you do.
I will. Do you have it on the camo print? You know, I like the camo.
No, not yet. I'll tell you this. If you could get another joke trophy, I'll give you a hat.
Well, I mean, I'm still waiting on like the 7 from like the last 3 episodes.
No, we, Madot and I and Joe decide the trophies. Ice Cream Joe and
such bullshit.
Jelly Joe. All right, let's go. We got a show to do, man. That's the rules. I made them. You don't get a hat until you're funny as fuck. So get funnier.
That's fine.
All right, hey, let's get to it. We're trying to get better today. We always start the week off with some getting better.
Yeah, let's get better, man.
All right.
Guys, Andy, question number one. Andy, I'm 21 years old with a college degree, and I have a career job. Oftentimes, I hear people say that I'm doing well for my age. But I know I have a lot of work to do if I want to escape the normal life that everyone else seems to be stuck in. My question for you is, can you be happy with what you have while still wanting so much more? I know I have a lot of work to do and I'm nowhere near where I want to be, although oftentimes I find it being the only thing in my head. Do you find yourself content while still not getting lazy?
Ed Milet talks about this a lot. What he calls it is blissful dissatisfaction, okay? Mm. And what that means is you can be very grateful for what it is you have right now and still be ambitious with goals and dreams and visions that you want for yourself. And in fact, being grateful is part of being happy along the journey. Being happy along the journey takes three components. It takes gratitude, it takes a mission, and it takes discipline. And if you have those three things operating in your being along the way, you're going to be happy along the way. That's reality. So yes, it's very possible. Most people don't do it because most people focus so far or so heavy on the future that they ignore what's going on in the present, which makes them feel dissatisfied, which is great for ambition. But I mean, don't you want to like enjoy the ride as opposed to being frustrated and angry that you're never where you want to be? And I think this is something that all ambitious people, all driven people struggle with, because it's very easy to lose sight that the current conditions that we're in are usually something that we wanted really badly a long time ago, but we refuse to acknowledge or be grateful for where we are and continue to focus on the future, which leads us into this mentality of always being frustrated because we're never where we want to be. And the problem with that is that you're never going to be where you want to be, because everywhere you are, you're looking forward. So it's important to be very grateful for who you are. And in my case, how I do this is I am grateful for the opportunity to improve. Mm-hmm. And that's how I look at it. So, yes, I'm grateful for my life. I'm grateful for my friends. I have the coolest life you could fucking have, dude. I get to come to work. I get to work with my brother and my best friends, and we get to build shit and create shit and help people doing it. And I get to come here and do this show, and you know, you guys support the fuck out of us. And you know, like, dude, my life is awesome, like all the way around. And it really has nothing to do with like what people think it would be, mm-hmm. right? People think it would be the money or cars or success, right. But those are just a byproduct of me truly being grateful for the opportunity that I have every day and then executing against that, mm-hmm. which over years creates the success part of it, right? And a lot of people just look at the success part. They don't look at the importance of the gratitude and putting you in the right state to where it's like Ed says, it's a good term that he uses. It's blissful dissatisfaction. Yeah. You're very happy, but you're also dissatisfied and you want more. And at the surface, that sounds like two contrary
contradicting
ideas.
Yeah, yes, yeah, for sure.
But they're really not. Hmm. And if you could put those two things together, they really help you move forward, and not just help you move forward, but help you move forward faster and more enjoyable than you would if you didn't have that gratitude for the environment that you're currently in.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about the flip side of this, man, because I feel like, you know, okay, I understand that. You absolutely, both things can exist.
Right.
But I feel like on the flip side of that, you know, we have a lot of people in society, I know you see it, I see it, you know, people listening see it, where, you know, there's people that have this mentality that it's always about just staying in the state of gratefulness without, you know, the pursuit mm-hmm. or ambition of the goals. It's the, you know, oh, well, you know, you got to stop and smell the roses. Well, hey, listen, the roses only bloom a couple of times a year.
That's right.
You know, what are you going to do for the rest of the year?
Yeah.
You know, and so like, can we talk a little bit about that, about being stuck in just this, oh, well, I mean, just I'm going to be grateful every single day for what I have without adding that ambition or the goals. What's the consequences of that?
Well, the consequences are lack of fulfillment of someone's potential. That's the problem. So success is relative to the person. True. Okay. Not everybody wants to be a billionaire or a millionaire or whatever. They don't need that shit. But what they do need is a purpose and a mission. And so when we talk about, like, right now, when we're talking about advancing yourself, it's not necessarily always in your career. It could be in your fitness. It could be in your personal relationships. It could be in your spirituality. It could be in all of these different areas. And when we consider, you know, the environment, the social environment that we're in, which basically tells everybody you're good enough, you're worthy, you know, you don't need to worry about competing with anybody, you know, just be grateful for what you have and live in peace. And we have all these people who are so far deep in their fucking feelings that they do paralyze themselves towards forward progress. And the danger to that is that deep down in their heart, those people truly do want a better life. They do want financial success. They want a good house. They want things that they're proud of. They want the freedom, at the very least, to not be strangled by the constraints of not having enough money. And because they feel like this is like an immoral thing because it goes against the grain of what society is saying right now, what happens is they pause in their life. So they pause in this place of, I'm in my feelings. I'm ultra grateful for what I have. I don't need anything more. I'm a minimalist, blah, blah, blah. And when they pause for, this phase of their life for 3 or 4 or 5 years, then they wake up and they're like, oh, fuck. I actually need this and this and this and this and this.
Yeah.
And so that's the danger, right? Because most people grow out of that because they become unblissfully dissatisfied,
right?
Because they've been standing still for too long, and most people don't realize how important having a purpose and having a mission is to the mental health of human beings. We are not meant to sit around and just vibe out, bro. That's not like what the fuck we're meant to do. We're meant to go do things, accomplish things, contribute to things that are bigger than ourselves. And when we're doing that as human beings, we are essentially much more happy. Yeah. There's certain people that aren't, but those people are not the people that you or I or anybody else here is going to associate with on a regular basis. So, that's the danger. The danger is you get to the end of your life and you say, fuck, I didn't really do anything because I bought into this ideology that I was enough and I was this and I was that. And, when I hear those things, where my mind goes is the intentional. I believe that a lot of the messaging in society towards victimhood, towards being in your feelings, towards being content, towards having a meek lifestyle, minimalist lifestyle, humble lifestyle, like people like to call it, which actually doesn't have anything to do with it. But I believe that's all intentional, because if we have a society of high achieving, wealthy individuals who are fit and knowledgeable and active in their communities, it's much harder for the politicians and the people who are controlling society to have control over society. And so when we see these messages, coming on health magazines with fitness models that are 400 pounds saying this is healthy, we have to look, because we all know that's not true. Right. We all fucking know that. So we have to look at why they're saying that. Why are they saying that? Why are they saying you don't need money? Why are they saying you're fucked up in the head? Why are they saying you're healthy when you're not healthy? Why are they convincing us that going out and creating something is some sort of moral inferiority? Why do they villainize success when success used to be the benchmark and the pinnacle and celebrated as an example? Why do they do those things? Well, it's because they don't want those things. And the reason they don't want those things is because it makes society harder to control. So this is also why we do CTI and why we do personal development, because a lot of the things in our culture right now are specifically and intentionally engineered to create a response that isn't beneficial to us as human beings or citizens of this country. If we really consider what our role is, and as a citizen, our role is not to sit around and rot and be in our feelings. Our role, we have a duty and an obligation to contribute to the betterment of our community, of our culture, of our country, by living a fruitful life that contributes to other people and the quality of our lives. So that's how I feel about it whenever I break it down.
Yeah, I love it, man. I love it. Guys, Andy, question number two. Hi, Andy. My boyfriend and I own a gym. Now, you've talked about creating culture with your employees, your business partners. Is it possible to create a culture with customers? And if so, how would you go about that? How do you do that? How do you create a culture with your customers?
By creating with your employees first. Everything comes from the culture that you cultivate with your team, and then the team cultivates the culture with the customers. So yeah, it's possible. I mean, this is why we have fanatical culture bases with many companies. If you look at Harley-Davidson, Harley-Davidson has a fanatic culture. Yeah. They don't give a shit if you're black or you're white or Asian or Latino or fucking anything, bro. They don't give a fuck. If you show up and you're riding a Harley or honestly any bike, you're cool. And that's the culture they create. And they created it because that was the club, the little club they created with their people inside Harley Davidson. And then it flows outward from there. Mm-hmm. So whatever it is you want your gym to feel like culture wise, you have to start building that with your team, and your team will build that with your customers. They will pick up on it, and you'll grow that out. But dude, that's not something you can do in one day. This is something that takes, you know, months and years to like essentially build out. And that's why, you know, defining what it is that you want your culture to stand for is so important. Again, when you guys ask me these questions about culture, these are full day, multi-day workshops that I could do on this. So I'm summarizing what you need, but you need to clearly define what you want your culture to stand for. Those are called core values. And then you need to legit run your company along those core values, hire by them, fire by them, communicate by them, live by them for real. And that goes for you. If you and your boyfriend don't live by those values, there's no chance any of your employees will. And I'm not saying you have to be perfect, but you have to consistently audit yourself against that list to ask, okay, am I living this? Is this reality? Am I setting this example? And the level that you do that at, your employees will pick that up and run at that level. So, you know, having a strong set of core values that you take time to define and talk about and work with your team is essential. These are the things that we teach inside Arete Syndicate. So if you want in-depth knowledge on these topics, that's something that I would consider looking at. Mm-hmm. It's for real entrepreneurs. It's not some shit where we sell you a course about how to do a fucking funnel. We're teaching you how to build a real company. And if that's something that you're wanting to do, I would consider applying to that.
Let me ask you this, because I feel like, you know, like looking at companies, sometimes you can stumble across success by accident, right? Or not really understanding like, oh shit, I've actually built a culture, mm-hmm. right? And for you—
Well, hold on. That brings a real important point, is that you're going to build a culture regardless. Hmm. Okay? Even if you unintentionally—
Good or bad, you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. So if you unintentionally— If you do not define your culture and you do not do it intentionally, you will unintentionally create a culture anyway. And that culture will not be, you won't accidentally create a great culture, bro. It's not going to happen. So it has to be intentional. So you're going to either live an intentional culture or an unintentional culture. And if you live an unintentional culture, you're going to have, it's not going to be the one that you want.
Yeah. Yeah. So with that being said, you know, it's like the culture of your customer base is downstream from the culture inside the office, right?
Yes.
So at what point, I guess, you know, either one of your companies that you've had, at what point, you know, in the history, like looking back on that timeline, did your intent really start to get heavy on the culture part of that, whether it was outside or inside the company?
2011. 2010, 2011, that's when I started figuring it out. Mm-hmm. And you have to realize that intentionally designing a culture in an organization where you have more than, you know, 10 employees is essential, because those employees need to know what to do when you're not there to tell them exactly what to do.
Yeah.
Okay. So the culture serves as guide rails for the autonomous decision making that's going to happen from your employees along the way. So like, if you're trying to grow a company and you get so many employees that you can't directly coach them, then what happens is they have to start coaching each other, and they do so by guiding themselves with the value system that you install in your company.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to ask you this last question on this, right? Like, look, same thing. Like, looking back on either one of your companies, right?
Well, I mean, I've got more than two.
That's what I'm saying. Like any one of them.
Yeah.
Looking back on them, did you notice, has the culture changed when you got intentional? Like, has it grown? Has it, because it's always this continuing like piece of like, okay, we're going to keep improving, we're going to keep holding it, but keeping those core values the same, how have you seen the culture change in any one of the companies? Look at 1P or S2, right? Like, has it grown? Like, how did it get to this point?
Yeah, it becomes a living, breathing organism that operates on its own.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, sometimes the culture gets sick, because you get a few individuals that don't live by the core values that come in and start poisoning the culture, and they become cancer. And then you have to cut those people out, and then you have to patch up the culture, and it starts to heal, and it gets better again. And that's another thing. People have to understand, that once you set it, it doesn't just stay good.
Right.
It goes up and down.
It wasn't just 2011.
Dude, that's not what happens.
Yeah.
It goes up and then it goes down and then it goes up and then it goes down. And when it goes down, you have to be perceptive enough to understand what's creating that and then make those adjustments. And so, you know, a lot of people, when they do this culture with business, they think that once they just put some words on the wall and tell people what the fuck they're going to do and how this is going to be, that that's all that's going to do. Dude, that's insane. Like, it's like learning a new language and you like just keep giving them one lesson and saying, hey, go speak Spanish.
Right.
You know, it's
dropped off in Mexico. Yeah.
This is a progressive, intentional investment in the living, breathing organism that will basically be perceived by everybody, your employees and your customers, as the feeling they get from your brand. Okay. And yeah, it's very hard to create. And that's why most companies don't have it, because the leadership won't put in the time and the effort to actually build relationships with their people, to actually personally develop their people, to try to make their people better and care about their people. Most people, they want to manipulate their employees in terms of, well, how can I get them to think I care without actually caring? Mm-hmm. And dude, people know the difference. Yeah. And you have to actually give a fuck, bro. And you should give a fuck, because these people are coming to battle with you every single day, bro. They're trading a big part of their life to work with you on a big mission that you guys both believe in. You should care about those people a lot.
Yeah. I want to, because I love this conversation. Does creating culture cost money? Can it cost money, or does it have to cost money?
I mean, yeah, things are going to cost money to do, bro. Like, as the culture gets bigger and better, you're going to do things. Like, you're probably going to go on trips with your team. You're probably going to take them out to eat. You're probably going to have events. But like, that's not a cost. That's an investment, because there's a return. Okay, you know what I'm saying? So like, yeah, I mean, you could do it with no money for sure. You don't have to have money and do these fancy things. Back in the old days, bro, what we used to do is just fucking get together and barbecue. You know what I'm saying? We get a Weber kettle.
Hot dogs.
Yeah. And drink some beers,
it was
bro.
A great time.
Yeah, it was fucking great. Actually, those are some of the best days. Those are like, that's one of the things I miss the most about what we do now, is that there's so many people involved, you can't do those little things. And then when you do those little things, other people get their feelings hurt because they didn't get invited or they didn't get asked. And what happens is those things start to fall off. So you have to find new ways to do those things. And, you know, like, for example, like, one thing I'll do is, you know, like, I'll have you, like, how I have you guys come over once in a while,
yeah,
or the media team guys come over, or the guys that I'm closer with here that I've been around for a long time that I'm friends with personally. You know, they'll come over, smoke some cigars, smoke a little other cigars, you know, and have a good fucking time. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Drink some drinks, fucking hang out. Like, that shit's important, bro.
Yeah.
And it's important in that environment to remember, like, if you're the decision maker or the shot caller or the CEO or whatever, that, like, dude, you're just one of the guys. You're just one of the guys, man. And that's a great thing, you know? So that goes back to the question we had a couple episodes ago, or maybe last episode, about being friends with people
who you're leading. Yeah,
man. You just got to drop your ego, dude.
I love it.
You know, when we're here, I call the shots. I listen to you guys, but, you know, sometimes I'll take your decision because it's a better decision.
Yeah.
Sometimes we're going to do what I want. You know, when we're out of here, you know, fuck, dude, I'm just one of the dudes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I love it. I love it, guys. Andy, our third and final question, question number three. Hey, Andy, I once read that successful people make decisions quickly and change them slowly, if at all. And a lot of time I have difficulty making a decision quickly, especially when there's multiple factors that could be affected by my decision. So, Andy, what is your thought process, if any, when making a decision in business or marriage or friendships, whatever? How do you make decisions properly? Thanks for everything y'all do.
It depends on the decision, guys. Like, fuck, you know, some decisions are like, what the fuck am I going to eat? I don't give a shit. You know, some of the decisions are what, you know, simple, basic ones.
Yeah.
Big decisions, you know, it depends. Because here's what I found. I think that people tend to try to identify how they're going to make decisions based upon what they've heard, by some bozo on the internet, right? Like, just like what he's saying, you know, oh, you got to make decisions quickly or don't make decisions quickly or this or that. When in reality, there's a ton of fucking nuance here, bro. Mm-hmm. Like, it just depends. And, you know, one of the things that I see people do consistently that really gets them twisted up, man, is they make decisions where they haven't given enough time for what I say to cake to bake, mm-hmm. okay? They're so impatient that they don't allow the fruits of the investment that they've made to pay off. Like, for example, like a lot of people will go on a diet, right? But they don't understand that the first 4 to 6 weeks, your body's kind of adjusting. And then after that, your results accelerate tremendously. You know, they don't stick it out long enough to ever see it happen.
And that's just not working.
Bro, most people never stick to a diet for 6 weeks. Yeah. So if they never stick to a diet for 6 weeks and they don't see how much it accelerates after that, then they just think that it doesn't work for them. You see what I'm saying? Right. And when it comes to business or when it comes to relationships, those are all different processes for making decisions. Relationships are going to go up and they're going to go down and they're going to go up and they're going to go down. I'm not talking about, you know, fighting and shit. I'm just saying the vibe of the relationship. And that's where, you know, you have to take into account, like, how important is this relationship to me? And, you know, is this, how do I make it better? What do I do? It depends on how invested you are in it. Like, obviously, if you are married, you're going to be more invested in that relationship than if you're just casual acquaintances.
Sure.
These things are nuanced decisions, right? Like, if I have a casual acquaintance and they bring me a lot of fucking pain, I just don't maintain that relationship. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
but if I've got an executive here who's been with me for 15 fucking years and he's having a really hard time, I'm going to give that guy some grace and we're going to work this out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it just depends, dude, and you've got to weigh all the variables. But what I would say to most of you guys is that most of you guys are too impatient. And impatience is a great thing because it forces you to go hard, right? If you're impatient and you're urgent, that you'll execute on a daily basis. But there is a need for what I call aggressive patience, which is be aggressive, but still understand that the game is like this. You could be as aggressive as you want. You still have to let time do its part. And if you don't allow time to do its part, then nothing can ever happen. And that's what people do. Most people start a thing. They go 2 to 3 years in the thing. They say, fuck, the thing isn't working. And they try another thing. But the real truth is in their career, it takes longer than 3 years to bear fruit. It usually takes double that.
Yeah.
Okay. At least to start bearing fruit. And you have to be good during that time. It's not just a time thing. So a lot of people will, you know, keep picking up their life and restarting and then being pissed off that they're never getting anywhere. Well, fuck, bro. If you get to mile 17 of a marathon and you fucking say, fuck this every single time, you're never going to finish one. All right. So this is where I see a lot of people make mistakes in this area of their life, is that they don't give the cake enough time to bake. All right. And you have to. You got to be aware of that. And then you got to be aware, did I give the cake enough time to bake and it's not just turning out and I need to pivot? These are all skills that you learn by going down the path and being on the journey. It's like an artist, bro. You start to like just kind of know. Mm-hmm. All right. Like when fucking Zoltan's on stage with Five Finger Death Punch, he's not consciously thinking of what he's playing. He's just fucking going,
yeah.
Right? It's just automatic. And when you go down the path long enough, you start to get a feel for where these things are. Like, you can kind of look ahead and say, all right, yeah, the cake's not fully baked, but I can see that it's not gonna bake and I can make a pivot. And that's a skill set that you get from going on the path of entrepreneurship or whatever path you're on. You have to go down the path to learn the skill. And a lot of people think that they can buy a course or join a club or get a mentor, and that person's going to be able to download this skill set of nuanced decision-making into them, which you cannot. You can only get it from experience. And so this is a big fallacy that a lot of young entrepreneurs make, not young in age, but young in the game, is that they think that, you know, there's a set standard for this, and they think they got to have all the skills before they go, when in reality, the skills come from the going. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So you have to go first and then learn as you go. And guess what's going to happen? You're going to make mistakes. And this is why I tell you guys all the time, there's really only two fucking skills that you need. You need the ability to learn from your mistakes, and you need the ability to never fucking quit. And if you have those two things, and you're intelligent enough to, you know, when you make a mistake, to learn the lesson and then put that skill in your tool belt, so when that situation arises again, you're now able to recognize it and pull that tool out and hit it and be successful at this time. But the only reason you're able to do that is because you failed it last time. Okay, so these failures provide skills. We use the skills moving forward. And that's why entrepreneurship is one of the coolest games in the world. Because, dude, the older you get, the more dangerous you really are. Because, you know, a fucking 60-year-old entrepreneur, that guy's smart. That guy's made all the mistakes. That guy's done everything. And that's why we can play this game our entire lives and get better and better and better. And for a lot of you young guys, this is why you should never fuck with the old guys, because they know way more than you. They have way more resources than you, and they can fucking bury you for being an asshole. So you should be polite when you're just getting started out, and not go out running your mouth, talking all this shit, bro, because you'll get crushed and you won't even know why you got crushed.
Or who crushed you.
Yeah, you won't even know. You won't even know, bro.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: How much weight do the opinions of others matter when you're making a decision? Right, like you're talking to a team.
Depends on the person.
Yeah, for you.
For me?
Yeah, for you. Like, how? Like, no, you got to make a decision. You bring your
look,
team
bro,
in.
Look, bro, this is where you have to drop the ego. Like, a lot of people think that leadership is, you know, dictating. You know, this, that, do that. This is the play. I know all the answers. That's not leadership, bro. Leadership is, DJ, what do you think, dude? Mm-hmm. And you tell me what you think. Joe, what do you think? Madat, what do you think? Other Joe, what do you think, dude?
That was kind of fucking stupid.
You're not Other Joe, but you know what I'm saying. All right, so I listen to all the ideas, mm-hmm. and then I say, okay, well, what do I think? Mm-hmm. Well, I think this, and I think Madat's got a point there, and I think Joe's got a point there. And I think if I mix all these together, we got the right decision. And then my job as the leader is to say, okay, this is the path we go on. And that's not, I come up with, and sometimes the whole answer comes from someone else on the team. And I'm like, fuck, that's brilliant. And I have to have, be humble enough. This is where humility comes in, okay, yeah. As an entrepreneur. I have to be humble enough to say, fuck, Madat had a much better idea than I had. Let's go that way. And we have to put the team first. That's actual leadership, because if you put that into a life or death scenario, right? Like, we're out on a battlefield and I'm responsible for your guys' lives, all right? I have to make the best decision for the team. And in business, that's not always the case, because people think that leadership is one thing when in reality, it's a servant's position,
yeah.
If you're truly a great leader. So, and it's also a lifetime skill set that you have to work on and invest in and learn about and practice. And it's not something that you can do in a week or a month or 5 years or 10 years. Great leaders are built over a lifetime. And it's practice. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to have bad things happen. And if you can learn from those things, and you could build enough resilience and grit and fortitude and determination and discipline to continue moving forward when things get really fucking hard, you can't really be fucked with. Like, nobody can fucking beat you if you can never quit and you're smart enough to learn the lessons. Mm-hmm. And that's really the whole game. It's just, you know, people want to think it's something else because you can't just do it in one day.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. So, you know, you mentioned that the cool thing about entrepreneurship is the longer you're on that journey, the more skills you're building, the more knowledge and experience you have,
yep.
Right? And so, you know, on this topic of decision-making, do you find it easier or harder now to make decisions when you have, you know, hundreds, thousands of employees that those decisions will affect versus back in, you know, 2006 when you had a team of 10? Are the decisions harder to make or easier to make now?
No, it's the same process. Hmm. It doesn't matter. The same process, because the team, it's team first. So it doesn't, it's not a,
yeah.
If you're always team first, it's team first. And so there's no extra pressure to make a decision if you're carrying more weight or less weight in terms of responsibility.
Yeah.
So if you always put the team first and your mission is first, which it should be, and you don't the angst and the stress and the anxiety and the frustration comes when you're trying to make a decision that benefits you a little more than the team. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And you feel a little guilty
and
for
you,
it.
You know it.
Yeah. And that's a process that young leaders go through, especially when their company first starts making some money.
Yeah.
So, and they've never had any. So yeah, dude, that's, you know, part of it as well.
Yeah. I love it, man.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, guys, Andy, that was three.
Yep. Go pay the fee.
Went from sleeping on the floor. Now my jewelry box froze. Fuck a bowl, fuck a stove. Counted millions in a cold.